Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. This week, we're at the London Motorcycle Show.
Yay!
It's very, very busy today. It's quite a compact little show, but yeah, absolutely rammed with people and bikes and some new bikes for 2024 and some customs. So, in this episode, we're going to have a good walk around and show you some of the best-looking bikes, most exciting bikes, and some of the weird bikes as well. First up, the Triumph stand. We've got a few interesting new bikes here. So there's the new Tiger 1200, which was announced yesterday, I believe.
Yep.
Not a great deal huge to say, but they have rubber mounted the bars to make it feel a bit less vibey. They've given it more inertia in the engine to make it feel more weighty and smoother in the sort of low revs and like more refined. And so it seems like they're trying to tune out those vibes from the T-plane crank.
Makes sense.
I did a whole video about it.
I think, yeah, and I've heard criticism of that. It's probably the only criticism you can sort of level at that bike, to be honest. So it's good that they've tweaked it.
It's really good, refined. Yeah. It's just like sitting on the motorway. It's funny, in the comments of my video, there's some people who own it and they say, oh, it's just people looking for something to complain about who can't afford one. That's what they said. But yeah, I think there is something to be said for it, especially if you ride it back to back with something like a GS, which is buttery smooth.
Yeah.
We've also got the new Triumph motocross bikes, the TF250X. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, Tim, if you could take us through absolutely everything you need to know about that bike.
Oh yeah, hold on. No.
We didn't know anything about motocross, do we?
No, it's not something I do an awful lot of and really would like to.
It looks fun. It's something, you know, it's one of the new bikes here that we haven't had a chance to see before. I don't think they had it at Motorcycle Live, for example.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should say something about it. But I've got to say, all motocross bikes, to me, look almost exactly the same. I can't look at them and say, oh, those are interesting brakes, or look at that suspension configuration, or that's a big tank.
No, it wouldn't take long to get out of my depth talking about it. All I know is I like motocross. I just don't
like
know
watching
much
it.
About
and I've got to say, they look cool as well. I really like the new branding with the Triumph Racing Yellow, they're calling it. It's fluorescent.
Yes.
Looks really cool. That's the extent of my knowledge, I'm afraid. But one bike I do know quite a bit about is the new Daytona 660, which was announced maybe a couple of months back now. I actually got to go and see it in the flesh at the factory, and I was really quite impressed with how it looked. I think, you know, the idea that a 660 can take the Daytona name and, you know, people are saying that might cheapen it, sort of vanished. When I saw it in the flesh, I thought, actually, this looks quite cool. And versus the other Ninja 650 and stuff like that, it looks a bit more premium.
Yeah.
But is it your first time seeing it now?
First time sitting on it.
Thoughts?
Indeed. It does feel dinky. It's a nice sort of svelte bike.
Yeah.
The cockpit feels a little bit more narrow, so you can hug in on that quite well. Obviously quite familiar with the engine because you had the Trident.
Yeah.
And the Tiger as well,
Tiger
right?
Sport,
Tiger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's got good foundations to start from.
On paper, it looks good, right?
Yeah. Excellent. If it's competing with things like the R7, I think in that bracket, it certainly offers something that some of the others don't as well, being a triple, so it's a good choice.
I think it looks great in this white, and the red's not too bad either.
Yeah.
I still do get why people maybe, if you're a sort of hardcore Daytona enthusiast, might be a bit underwhelmed by it.
Yes.
But for the people who are actually buying those middleweight sports bikes, surely this is going to look pretty tempting. I mean, it's probably the best looking bike in that category now. Would you say R7?
I'd probably say so. And that tends to be with the newest as well, right? They tend to look fresher.
There is that.
A little bit fresher. So yeah, I think it is the prettiest of the bunch, but I do think having a triple does add something. I do understand, though, I guess with Daytonas in days gone by, they were more the performance of, say, the current street triple.
Yeah.
And this is the performance of the older street triple, if you like.
Yeah,
so yeah. I do understand why they would say it would cheapen it. I don't think I feel that personally.
Yeah, I do get it, but look, the majority of people aren't riding those super aggressive bikes. And I've recently borrowed a ZX6R from Kawasaki, and it was cool to ride. But I've got to say, for the road, something a bit more chilled out.
Yes.
Does make more sense. You just sat on it. What do you think of the riding position? The sitting position.
Well, having just sat on a bike and felt the levers, I can now tell you everything about
everything
how that bike rides and performs.
I nailed it.
Do you know what? I was expecting maybe a little different finish with the cockpit. I do think it's not as premium as the likes of the Speed Triple or Street Triple. But that kind of makes sense anyway. I don't hold that against it. Yeah, it's a comfortable place to sit. Can't tell you much more than that.
It doesn't feel like tailed up and over the front, though, does it?
I think it's quite chill. It's not an aggressive sport position, no.
One thing I've got to say that I didn't quite appreciate straight away when I saw the bike was actually, if you put it side by side with a 675, there are actually quite a few design details on the bodywork and stuff that are references.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks very different.
Yeah.
You know, proportionally, it's quite a different bike. But actually, little panels and shapes in the side panels and the fairings that are similar but just updated a little bit. And so I actually quite like that, paying a little bit of homage to the 675. So maybe there is a little bit there for the Daytona... What would you call them?
Enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Daytonista.
Yeah, no, I was going to say Daytonisti. Yeah.
Ducati will be angry about that.
Yeah, really looking forward to trying this bike out, getting one for review. Hopefully we'll both get on it and then we
can
swap
notes. I mean, it's pointless
now.
I have sat on it and felt the levers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've ridden the engine before in the Trident. You've sat on it. We know everything about this bike, but, you know, we'll do the due diligence of taking one for a spin before we do give you our full thoughts. Now, over to the Norton stand, which is adjacent to the Triumph stand. Do you think there's any, like, turf war going on?
Yeah, they line up
a bit
against each other, yeah.
But they've got some of the 125th anniversary special editions on the stand, which are quite spectacular. So we've got the transatlantic version of the Commando here, which is a red, white, and blue paint job.
Yes.
I think inspired by some of the... race bikes of some sort of era.
If in doubt,
I did a whole video on it. I do so many heads now, But the ones I think I really do like are the 588s, which I do remember are inspired by those sort of rotary bikes from, like, I think the 80s and 90s with the black finish and then some big stripes on them. For me, the best looking. Gold wheels. Can't beat gold wheels.
Oh, that's true. It does add some horsepower, yeah.
But we've got up there the... V4CR, which is the naked modern cafe racer built on their V4 platform.
Yeah.
The V4SV, which is the fared sports bike.
Yeah.
And they also do a Commando in that paint job. Did you see the prices?
No.
Do you want to take a guess? Commando, how much do you think you got to pay for that?
Commando was what, 20 something? I'm going to say 24.
Oh, you'll be pleasantly surprised. £18,999.
Oh, bargain.
V4CR, the naked.
All right, that's upwards of 25. Yeah, maybe 30?
£30,000, he says. You'll be disappointed on this one.
Oh.
The V4CR comes in at £49,999.
Oh, all right, yeah, bargain.
V4SV?
More, 45?
That was £49,999. It's 51 for the...
Oh, the other one was 49.
Yeah.
I wasn't even paying attention. That was me hoping it was 40.
It's numbers that the brain can't compute, isn't it? That's the problem you've got. You're overloaded.
Yeah, it's something that I'm not even considering because it's way outside my budget. So yeah, you might as well have said £1 million.
Yes, pretty much. It's the £1 million car probably of the motorcycle world, if you know what I mean. Like that supercar level of pricing.
For sure.
It has to be said, especially the SV with all the carbon, it does look quite stunning on the stand. But the question is... Firstly, money no object. Yeah.
Which
of the
one?
Three tickles you fancy?
I've got to say, the V4, the fared version of the V4 would be my go-to, I think. I'm kind of in that vibe now. I like that look. I think it's making a resurgence.
I think it's the V4CR that does it for me. But what would be nice about that is we could go out riding together and we wouldn't feel embarrassed that we're on the same
bike.
It's not
like we're wearing the same outfit.
Yeah. On the flip side, money is an object. This sounds a bit dramatic. They got you at gunpoint.
Oh, right.
They're forcing you down to a Norton dealer to put your card in the machine and you have to buy one of those three bikes.
I got to go Commando, though, haven't I? Yeah.
Why are you want? You're not wearing pants?
No, well, if they got me at gunpoint, I'm doing whatever
Commando.
They want me to do.
Oh.
If they've said pants off, we're going down to Norton, then I guess I'm going down to Norton.
This podcast taking a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. £18,999 is a little bit more than a standard Commando, and it is a very nice paint job.
True.
£50,000 on a bike, man. Who's paying that sort of money, you know?
If it's small change, I mean, honestly, it is a nice looking bike. And in terms of the bikes on display here, the bikes that I'm familiar with, you cannot argue with the fact that Norton just have a quality of finish that elevates them above a lot of their competition.
They're definitely the most fancy pants looking bikes at the show. You know what though? We've been trying to get hold of a V4CR to ride and review because they announced it last year and they said it's going to be coming out soon. They did a little track launch for the SV version, which I didn't go on because I suck at track riding. but when they were doing the CR, I was like, yes, you know, get on one. It's one of those bikes that just like bucket list to ride for me. It just looks so unusual and fantastic. Yeah. Then they offered me the opportunity to ride it up the hill at Goodwood Festival of Speed, but I would only get one run. And, and it's a long way to go, and a whole day out, just to ride for, it's really a couple of minutes up the hill. I did it with Triumph the other year.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what, guys? Great opportunity. I'm going to hold off until I can get one for like a week or two.
Yeah.
And, you know, do a proper review and get under the skin of it and take my time and film something actually good to watch. And then... still not happened yet.
So you wish you had taken Goodwood?
What it is, I think they're not ready for the road yet. And so I should have probably taken that opportunity to get a good video out there about it. But yeah, massively on the list. Hopefully that video comes soon. And it's just, a bit of a dream bike for me. The SV as well.
You can invite me over when that turns up.
Oh, thanks, mate. Very kind. You offering to lend a hand.
Yeah, selflessly.
It must be British brand corner because we're at BSA now. Yeah. Obviously manufactured elsewhere, I think, in India, isn't it? But historic British motorcycle brand. And it's got to be said, they're quite nice looking bikes. I rode the new Gold Star last year or the year before. Yeah. We did it on a closed circuit because, again, they weren't ready for riding on the road. It's a while since I did that. But now, coming back and kind of seeing it on the stand, I can see why people might be drawn into that.
They still get the interest, yeah. How did you find it to ride? Was it fun? Was it engaging? Did it feel a bit old?
So it's a big single, right? It's probably one of the bigger singles you can buy. I think the KTM 690 that's in their Supermoto and used to be in the Duke, that's probably the biggest. But this is a big 650 single. Mm. So I was expecting it to feel, in comparison to the Enfield, vibey and a bit agricultural.
Sure.
But actually, they've done a great job on balancing it, and it was really surprisingly smooth. It's so similar to an Interceptor on price, looks, specs, mm-hmm. chassis.
Yeah.
The key differentiator is that, for me anyway, the big one is the engine character, and I wouldn't say it's a sacrifice having a single, it just feels different.
Okay.
And when you've got, on the press ride, 10, 15 of them all fired up at once.
Yeah.
Like, pop, 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 that single sound. I think it's very nostalgic for some of the older gents reviewing the bikes who got transported back to yesterday. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Yeah.
But not really. But it is a nice sound. And I think, quite nostalgic for some people. New, at the moment though, they just announced this at Motorcycle Live, is a fully blacked out version. So if you think of something like the T100 Black or T120 Black from Triumph, similar treatment. So all the chrome's gone, all the colourful paint in favour of a blacked out version. What do you think though? Would you go like red and chrome, or do you like this new?
I think it depends on the bike. It is very case by case, but I would say with a bike like this, I kind of want some shine on there.
Yeah.
I think.
A bit of bling.
Right? Yeah. And if it's going to look a little bit more vintage, I think for me, it does have to have a bit of chrome on there. But, you know, each to their own. I like the design. It's nice to do something a bit different.
But I get what you're saying. It's more fitting. If you're going to buy a BSA, you want something that's got that sort of vibe. However, the other option that I'm going to present to you is what we think is maybe one of the best custom bikes that we've seen here today. Mm. This little BSA Scrambler behind us. It's not a production run or anything. I think they've commissioned it from, is it More Speed Racing? Yeah, More Speed Racing. Really nicely done, isn't it? That'd be the one to take.
Yeah, it does actually put me in mind, and not to refer too much to the Interceptor, but do you remember the Malay Interceptors they did for the
Malay Rally?
Malay Rally, yeah.
Malay Rally?
It's just fun to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it puts me in mind a little bit of that. It's definitely got a bit of that look to it.
Like a more purposeful version of the bike that it started as.
Yeah, and you know, maybe you don't want to take this off-road. As we know with all scramblers, it looks like it can go off-road, but you don't really want to do it, yeah. But it does tend to be a little bit nicer on road because you're a little bit higher and elevated with your hands and stuff like that. It's a more comfortable riding position. I did like playing the find the indicator game on that bike. I love
minuscule.
It.
Minuscule.
Yeah.
Teeny I've never tiny. Seen, well, it was hard to see them anyway, but yeah, I've never seen indicators that well integrated and small. It's a proper nice custom
job. It's the integration
job.
That's the big thing for me. And actually, that colorway, although it's not something necessarily I'd pick from a catalog for myself,
very in keeping.
Yeah, really cool.
It's a beautiful thing. You've got knobbly tires, knobbly bobblies, some upgraded shocks on the rear. I like the big wide braced bars with a bit of detail, a license plate off to one side. What are we talking exhaust-wise as well? Let me have a look. Oh yeah, like a high scrambler pipe on that side. I bet that sounds good. It doesn't look like it's got a cat or anything, so that'll be proper loud. And that's one of our favorites, I think. We already did a little walk around of the show to pick out a few bikes we wanted to come and talk about. Straight away, we looked at that and we're like, let's get back here and have a look at it. So let us know what you think of it down in the comments. Guess what, mate? It's another historical British motorcycle brand. Manufactured elsewhere.
Yeah.
We're at Royal Enfield. I feel like this is one of the busiest stands here today. There's a lot of buzz around it. I don't know if it's because it's
that
like...
That goes with my theory about Royal Enfields. People love them.
Yes. Well, can't I think that's proven in the sales figures. They always sell pretty well.
Yeah.
We saw the new Himalayan at Motorcycle Live. Had a little bit of a look at that. But I think the talking point here today is the Shotgun, which has been released sort of since that. And it's like a slightly more modern looking version of their Super Meteor 650 and a little bit more sporty. Now, I've actually got one in the studio at the moment for review. I've not published it yet, but I've had a little ride on it, so I've got some first impressions. But as you like to do a quick review by just sitting on a bike at a motorcycle show, First impressions, what do you think? I mean, you can say what it looks like.
To be honest, I feel fairly qualified on this occasion because I have ridden the Super Meteor quite a lot. So, you know, I've got something to compare it to, yeah, exactly. I have to say, so my first impressions are that it is noticeably a little bit taller. I say noticeably, sounds like I'm going to say it's drastically taller, but it is a little bit taller, therefore a little bit more leg room.
Yeah.
Probably more to most people's liking in terms of the general overall position.
Yes, it's sort of more like an Interceptor than it is a Cruiser. It's closer. And even the Super Meteor is not a particularly low bike. It's sort of like a mid-Cruiser. It's easy to get on with. The pegs aren't far forward. The seat's not super low. And then to lift that a little bit, really you're getting quite close to like a naked retro bike in terms of riding position. But I think, like you say, that'll keep the appeal broad.
Yeah.
Especially because I think there's probably not a great deal of overlap with existing Royal Enfield customers and like proper cruiser market. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it is a little bit more functional in as much as you can take off that pillion seat. I literally just pulled it off. I've broken it already.
Yes.
But you can change that obviously for a luggage rack if you want to and then maybe just change the look of it. I think that's quite a nifty little feature. It's a tiny little feature, but it's, you know, it's important.
I always like that though on the Triumph Scrambler 900. There was an accessory to swap out the passenger seat. And I always wonder as well why you can't do it on more bikes like my Tiger, for example.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to be able to swap that passenger seat that I barely ever use? And then I was wondering, actually, is that safe? If you've just got a seat latch and then you strap a heavy bag to it, maybe that's the issue. You need a proper swap out for a rack like that.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the main talking points that differentiates it from the Super Meteor. So you're a little bit taller in the seat.
Yeah.
You've got this modular rear end where you can configure it as like a solo setup or a rack or a passenger seat. The other one's the Lux. Slightly more modern, blacked out in terms of the hardware, the engine, and then this variety of paint jobs that are similar to what you see on the Scram 411, where it's graphical, colourful. What would you say aesthetically is more to your taste, given that we just said you preferred the more chromed and colourful BSAs to the blacked out version?
Yeah.
Is that a consistent view across all motorcycles, or are you a case-by-case kind of guy? And it's
I'll take it case-by-case.
Oh, so you prefer this?
I actually do. No, I really do. I like that colorway as well. I like even the little flash of yellow on there as well, I think does look quite nice.
Bit of military green is always nice on a bike, especially slightly historical.
Yeah, and that mixed with the black goes really well as well.
The one I've got for review is the sort of dark gray and white over there with a bit of red. Again, it looks really, really cool. And I don't know if you've also noticed, but like the headlight nacelle, look at the way that it's clamped on around the top yoke and the bottom yoke there. Sort of like sculpted and angled, and there's some really nice design details. There might have been a perception years ago that Enfields weren't that detailed, or you know, maybe the quality wasn't quite there.
Sure, a little rough and ready.
But I really feel like now it's getting very, very, very close to things like a Triumph level. Not quite as classically done, perfect proportions on some of those Bonnevilles and stuff, but the gap's a lot smaller now.
It's getting, it's a much smaller margin,
We've broken the mold now. We're over at Harley-Davidson, an American manufacturer. Yeehaw, as they say. They asked us to mention the fact that if you demo a Harley at the moment, you're in with a chance of winning a 17-day trip along Route 66 on their bikes, all expenses paid and flights and everything covered. So there's that. Also, another interesting thing over here is the fact that now they're officially partnering with Jekyll and Hyde. Now, I had one fitted to my Indian FTR long-term press bike recently, and basically it's an exhaust system that has a valve, and you can have it shut so you don't annoy your neighbours, and then when you want it to sound a bit more throaty, you can open it up and it sounds cool.
And you can piss off other people's neighbours.
They fired a bike up earlier, so
they did.
we could listen to it. And have you heard one in the flesh before? The difference between the two
settings?
I think
I have. I think I'm pretty sure you showed me on the FTR. It was nice as well to see the little cut through cross section of it, that you could actually see the valve in it. And I was like, oh yeah, no, that's cool. That's what I figured it would look like. Yeah. But it was nice to see it all the same. I do love the little button. It is so discreet.
It's a bit James Bond.
It is very, And it was also speaking to the guys here, telling us that it does meet legal requirements, which are obviously getting stricter. They're actually, I think they are setting up, but you told me a while ago about the cameras that do judge your decibels,
You
can get a fine through the post. So I was like, genuinely, if a policeman pulls you over and they know what that thing is, are you still safe? And he said yes. And that's quite a big deal for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. Like, basically what it does is there's a certain level of revs that they measure the sound at by the side of the road in places that are very strict with it, like Austria.
Yeah.
And I believe the system on the Jekyll and Hyde exhaust knows that if it's been run at those revs, like, and just held there to close, and there's no way they can do you, even if, you know, it's obviously louder around that rev range. It's just fact. That's where they test it, and it's not that loud at those revs. But it brings me back to a podcast episode a few weeks ago where we were talking about the fact that there was a company in the UK doing exactly the same thing for cars, pretty much, and they got taken to court and successfully prosecuted, didn't they?
So
it makes me think, mind you, surely...
How long is it still good for is my question.
Yeah, that's my question as well. It's a fantastic... It's pricey, but like it does what it promises to, and it sounds really, really nice.
Yeah.
How long are they going to be able to keep doing it? I don't know. But you would imagine with a company the size of Harley-Davidson with all the legal boffins... Is that fair? Legal boffins that they've got? One would hope they bottomed it out before they commit to like a relationship. but yeah, you can get those fitted in the dealer now and ride your bike away with it as sort of a supported accessory.
I have to say, it did sound, I mean, they sound good anyway when he first fired up, and I was like, oh no, it doesn't feel like it needs it. And then he switched it over to loud mode.
Is that it now?
And I was like, I think it is, yeah. And I was like, that does sound noticeably better. But then when he cut back to, you know, stock sound, if you like, it did feel like there was something missing. I did want it back.
Well, I've got to say, mate, thinking about that, and I wholeheartedly agree, it's like a really nice difference. And when you get used to that louder sound, you're like, oh, yeah, bring that back in a little bit. It's just great to have the option to switch between, like when I was riding my FTR. Yeah. Like, there's so many scenarios where you're sitting in traffic or you sat on the motorway and you're like, oh, I could just do without that drill in the head of bass. And you can switch it off. But yeah, I also really appreciate that Harley really seemed to make an effort with demonstrating some of these features on the stand.
True.
Like, they've set up a stand with one of the bikes on.
True.
They've got the extractor fans to make sure the fumes aren't going to knock anyone out. The other thing you probably expect from the Harley stand is a few customs, and they haven't disappointed in that regard. It's probably the stand with the most custom bikes. One that, though, really caught my eye, it's not the most thorough in terms of like parts fitted and like visually it looks pretty similar.
It's not the most dramatic change, is it?
Yeah, but it's this Sports Duress where they put a carbon exhaust system on, a carbon heat shield, but it's the paint. They've given it like a candy red that really pops under the light in here. And given that the standard Sports Duress is always only available in quite muted paint options, it'll be like a black, there was a white one, there was a dark red, but nothing particularly popping. You know, this stands out. Why didn't they just do that? Just looks fantastic.
It's true.
Also, shout out for the tiny indicators on the back. I think they're the tail lights as well.
Yeah.
You seen those?
Yes, I have.
Microscopic.
Yeah. It's usually the first thing I go to.
99% of doing a custom bike, isn't it? Just get
it really is.
Make
the
indicators tiny.
Yeah, that's step one. That's at least 90% of it finished.
What have custom bike builders got against indicators?
I don't know. The weight, it's weight saving.
Yeah, good point. Performance gains. Now, we don't have a full Honda stand here, unfortunately, because they've got quite a few new bikes for this year. But we do have a little display which is celebrating, you know, the history of their famous Fireblade lineup. I'm not sure if I'm missing something though, mate, because it says celebrating the Honda Fireblade 1992 to 2024. So that is the 32nd anniversary, which just feels like a random number. Does it not?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's your 32nd birthday.
You've
got to do something special.
Yeah. Hey, it's a good bike to celebrate. What can I say? I mean, it's never a bad day when you get to see some classic Fireblades.
All of them.
Yeah.
You know, they've got pretty
in
much one
place
of each generation, which is really cool to see. There's one to sit on around the front of the new bike as well. We were talking about this, which is our favorite. I can't say that we grew up riding these sorts of bikes, so I'm sure there's more of that like really heavy nostalgia for anyone who owned a particular one. But I do remember buying my dad buying MCN and sort of flicking through and being like, whoa, look at that. And for me, it's this 1996. I just think it is what if I hear Fireblade and I think of like my strong affectionate feelings towards what that bike looks like and represents, that's the one that I remember just seeing in mags and being like, that is.
It stirs something in you.
Awesome. I love the paint schemes as well. I'm so happy that these sort of retro sports bike paint schemes are coming back in. You're seeing them more and more now with the Kawasaki's. Yes. Honda have done it on the Fireblade. This one is sort of like orange, purple, white, gray. Colors that shouldn't go together.
No, unless it's like a shell suit or something. It just doesn't look like it would work.
That design meeting where someone was like, so I'm thinking white, gray, and everyone's like, yes, purple, orange. And you're like, oh, yeah, easy, mate. But actually, in the flesh, it works.
It does. It works work. Really well. So that one's your favourite?
It's absolutely my favourite. And I also enjoy seeing the specs for it there. It says 97 kilowatts. Firstly, can everyone just agree on a standardised version of power figures? Horsepower, PS is the sort of, you know, one that
standardised, yeah.
Honda, even on their website, don't say horsepower, they say kilowatts. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that I think is, I don't know, what is it, like 140 horsepower or something? I tried to Google it and do a conversion, but there's no signal because we're in an exhibition centre. But I think it's more around that, like, 130, 140, 150 horsepower kind of mark, which just shows how far things have come. That sounds manageable-ish to me, not scary, 210 that you're getting on like the Panigales and stuff now. So yeah, things have moved on quite a bit. But yeah, nice to see those specs. Nice and light, 182 kilograms.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Gotta respect that.
That counts for a lot as well, yeah.
But it's not your pick.
It's not my pick, although I understand it is. It's
thanks,
close
mate.
To.
You're not slagging off
if
my
I
choices.
If I saw it pull up in a cafe, I'd, you know, I'd walk over to it, I think. But the one I'd rush over to is the original, the OG. So
with the round headlights.
Yeah, man. The 92 version for me is my favourite version if I was picking, but I'd imagine also probably commands a slightly higher price. You always find there's certain eras that just hold their value better than other ones. Like the one to my left, for example, probably doesn't hold the value quite as well.
Yeah.
That or actually the new one. It tends to be sort of top and tail for me with any bike, where the original looks fantastic and the new version looks great, but somewhere in the middle it kind of loses the vibe for me.
I'd say that given that this one that I like and you said, okay, I can get on board with that, is a 1996. This next one along is 2000. Not that. It's not.
A bit forgettable, isn't it?
It looks like the 600.
It's because they also got rid of the bullet holes on that one.
Yeah.
Right? You just need that little detail on the front, I think.
So what would that be? If we're in 2024, maybe there's like a 25-year cutoff where things start to actually look good.
That makes sense.
In terms of like retro-ness.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One final thing to point out, though, about these more retro bikes is just how upset a custom bike builder would be about the size of those indicators. They're like bricks.
Yeah.
Why did they feel the need to make them that big? Why spend the time making the fairing somewhat aerodynamic? Surely slightly smaller was possible. It's not like a technological thing, is it?
Maybe it was. I don't know.
There but
the same person that went into that board meeting went purple and orange and grey.
And I'm also thinking some bloody big indicators, because you got to know which way you're turning when you're doing 100 mile an hour at least. Yeah, they're massive. And I think, like, obviously LEDs make things smaller. We have small bulb indicators as well nowadays.
True.
So thank goodness for that. I like the look of the overall bike. You know, I'd love to own one, but it's also making me appreciate that we've moved on in the world in terms of like indicator dimensions.
Sure.
Now, we do have a British motorcycle brand that I think is at least assembled. I don't know about the engines, but I think the actual bikes are assembled here and a lot of it built here. And it's Langan, which I believe was one of the engineers from CCM. I don't know if I'm right about this. Went to start their own thing. The first bike they came out with was this V-twin two-stroke, which is absolutely wild looking. Another bike that, you know, I was contacted about potentially riding, and it hasn't quite come to fruition yet, but definitely one that I want to check out. Another nostalgia-inducing thing, I think, a little two-stroke. Like, people obviously get a bit of a boner for two-strokes,
don't
they?
Yeah, the sound, the smell,
again,
the feeling of it.
Not something I actually experienced, you know, in my life. Like, straight to big bikes, didn't we, pretty much, at a slightly older age. So, but yeah, still interested to see what that feels like to ride. But the bike that they've announced, I think this was Motorcycle Live as well, but we didn't get around to it, is the Lightspeed, which is this kind of like almost cruisery looking, sporty looking.
A little bit like Keanu Reeves arch kind of, yeah, it's got that kind of look to
power cruiser-esque almost.
Yeah, a little bit.
Diavel V4,
yes.
Where it's like a slightly relaxed geometry, but also ridiculously quick. Now, I jotted down some of the stats. I mean, beyond the way that it looks, I mean, that's a bike that really does have an impact. It's got to be said, as a statement piece and something interesting to look at,
it's one of the bikes of the show. I was saying before, obviously, with the quality of finish and the look to a Norton, it's one of the highest here. I think that takes the edge, man. If you look at the clock on that thing, all the little details, the filler cap, everything, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very intricately designed thing that has a sense of handcraftedness, which you also do get with some of those CCM Spitfires and stuff, although they're not here, which is a shame because I wouldn't have minded showing some of their bikes as well. But yeah, I had a little look for some of the specs on this thing, and it sounds a little punchy to ride as well. I mean, it looks great. Standing still, it looks fast, as they say. But we're talking a 1,190cc V-twin, makes 185 horsepower, which is phenomenal. It's got a wadge of torque as well. I think it was like 130 odd newton meters.
Yeah.
And it all comes in at 185 kilograms, which is extremely slender. I think if you put it in a drag race with a Diavel V4,
yeah,
given it's got more power, I don't know if that's a dry or wet weight, but I think it would still come in lighter, then that might be the quicker bike.
Yeah, that would be my guess, if all of that is to be believed. I mean, like you say, the weight's the biggest factor there, I guess, but incredibly fast. I mean, it earns its name then, doesn't it? If it's called light speed.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Langan. I was like, no, I don't know what you mean.
It earns the Langan.
It is a Langan.
No, but the name light speed. You can't call it that and not have something that is phenomenally quick.
Yes.
It's a big claim.
You can't be writing checks that your bike can't cash. It does sound like it would be rapid, but you're going to pay financially for the pleasure with a... Well, it sounds quite cheap now after we've been to the Norton stand.
Okay.
£37,000 for this one,
oh,
though.
Oh, bargain.
But anyway, we'll try and get a ride. Desperately try and get a ride on one of those as well. Now, moving on. We're over at Crazy Horse. I would say a, you know, chain of boutique dealerships.
Good word, yeah.
You know, real artisan feel to what they do. They only have brands like Indian and MV Agusta and some other kind of little niche things, and they do a lot of customization as well.
Yes.
I'd also say a company we've got a fairly long affinity with. Back in the days when I was just starting out and I was living in Greenwich, you know, they had a dealership just down the road in southeast London, and they were one of the first companies that were really cool about lending us bikes.
Open and engaging,
inviting us down and just... So, I always like to visit their stand and have a look at what they got out. At the moment, the real focus is on their custom stuff. And what I really like here is we've got a little collection of Indian Scouts, but in a real plethora of interpretations. I mean, it's a fantastic bike anyway. It's so revvy and punchy for a cruiser, but with that liquid-cooled engine.
Yes.
You know, it's got quite a lot of power. It's up around the 100 horses mark.
Yeah.
But then to take it and make all these different sort of traditional cruisers, this one they say is a Frisco chopper. There's some of those Japanese inspired chopper type bikes as well. I can't remember the name of that with the big tall seats. But then also a little bit of the flat track vibe as well, which is, you know, a long history with Indian. These customs, I think some of them, if I remember correctly from seeing them in the shop years ago, predate the actual FTR.
It's where the inspiration,
they used to say, like, we built an FTR before they probably built it. So anything you kind of caught your eye here, what would you go, cruiser or flat track?
For me, the flat track
Euro.
I tend to, now with the other bikes you may well say that I was playing it a bit more risky with my tastes. With this one, actually, I think I'd probably play it a little bit more subtle and safer bet, but I do like the flat track look. The FTR we love, right? Same sort of engine, same sort of platform, but a little bit more usable, I would say.
Yes.
Certainly in terms of not grounding out pegs and stuff like that.
Yes.
Just, you can do a little bit more with it. So, yeah, I like them an awful lot. I think what they've done really well is showing you that from them, you're not just getting it out of the box. I mean, you technically can from them, but the idea being that, you know, you can buy one of these and they've got the prices on there as well, that you could have it, just be a little bit different from your neighbours.
And there is a halfway house as well, which is, I believe they do offer that flat track style bike as a kit for the Scout.
Yeah.
There's some element of bespokeness. You get the seat unit and the headlight replacement with the number board.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll paint it up for you. But yeah, there's a lot to offer. If you fancy creating your own interpretation of a Indian bike, then there's no other place to go, mate, than Crazy Horse.
No.
Now, it might seem a little bit unusual to have MV Agusta bikes cohabiting on a stand with KTM, until you remember that Pierre Mobility Group, that owns KTM, also bought recently a big stake in MV Agusta. And what that now means is that I think all the marketing activities in the UK are sort of under the KTM group. So we've got CF Moto, which is another one of their brands, which is more the budget end. MV Agusta, which is the, let's say, more premium end. Bloody prices on these, mate.
Yes.
And then KTM somewhere in the middle, and they're sort of like responsible for all of it. One of the big announcements recently on the MV Agusta front was that new LXP, I was going to say Arioli. I think it's Arioli.
Right, okay. Dangerously close to Ariola. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the new adventure bike. It used to be called the 9.5 when it was in the concept stages. They branded it more with the sort of Lucky Explorer graphics and naming to reference back to those adventure bikes that were sort of famous for racing Dakar and stuff in the 80s and stuff like that. I don't know why they changed that, whether it's like an intellectual property thing, but they've...
For the names.
Toned it down a bit. Yeah, it's not called... It was called the Lucky Explorer 9.5.
Yes.
It doesn't have that branding anymore.
No.
But still very much the same vibe in terms of the lurks. I will say, versus the concept, They've changed a few things in terms of the finish. There's more kind of a bare metal finish on some of it. The proportions perhaps don't look quite as aggressive, but I'd love to get your thoughts on. I don't want to actually influence you. Like, well, how do you think it looks in the flesh?
How long ago was it? Like a year, 2 years even, that we actually went around the MV factory? And
did we see the concept there? Did they have it?
And yeah, we didn't see the bike in the flesh, but saw the designs for it. And I remember being quite excited for it. So trying to sort of cast my mind back is a little difficult. But if I ignore that and just take it on face value, it's a hell of a face. It's a very pretty looking bike. I think in terms of the market, where it sits, or just adventure bikes in general, it's unquestionably one of the prettiest looking, in my opinion.
Yes.
I hope other people would agree, but don't care if you don't. It's a really
pretty
bike.
He cares.
You care about the audience. Yeah, yeah. You value their opinion.
I care about the audience. But I like the look of that a lot. Yeah.
It's just got that, what would you call it, MV Agusta flair to it. Just applied to the dad bike category and format. It's almost like, are you a millionaire but fancy traveling in a more comfortable riding position? Because I would say, even like the naked bikes in the MV lineup, they're super revvy, super fast, highly strung, quite an aggressive riding position while you're over the front a bit. And so if you are a fan of the brand and all of the sort of passione that it involves, but you want something that's a little more practical, there is the Turismo Veloce, the sort of like sports tourer. That's quite a practical bike. But also this that has a bit more of an off-road bias. The only downside with this bike, I mean, one thing that I was excited about with it is for a 900-ish category bike, it makes 120 horsepower, I think. I was like, wow, that sounds quite rapid. And it's a new engine as well, this 950, that's a lot more mid-rangey and torquey in its tune than something like the 800 triples in the Super Veloce and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, it's got top-end power, but it makes more of it like lowering the revs. Yeah. There's more mid-range there. It's a non-T-plane triple, like the Triumphs are a bit vibey. This is smoother. I was like, wow, this sounds really good on paper. The only thing that saps a little bit of that punchiness, perhaps, is the weight. I seem to remember, I don't have the exact figure to mind, but when we did a walk around of it at EICMA, that was just the look down the spec sheet, you're like, yes, great brakes, you know, proper off-road wheels, good quality suspension, whole suite of electronics, beautiful looking bike. Price tag, obviously astronomical, so it puts it out of consideration for me. But just in terms of the job we do and what would you recommend looking at for someone who has loads of money, it'd be almost entirely there, but it's on the chunky side. It's 220, 230, 240 or something like that. It was something like that where I was like, oh, it's a lot more than a Tiger. So, but realistically, is anybody who's going to buy this bike really going to care? It just looks good and they'll just cruise around at low speeds so that everyone can have a good look at it.
Drink it in. Yeah, exactly.
Park it up outside a cafe and just say, yes, that is my bike. I wouldn't say that insurance is necessarily like the sexiest subject, so you've got to work a little bit hard to make it enticing to visit the stand. But I feel like you've got to say, Devitt Insurance, we're at the stand right now, have done a great job of that. They've got the best collection, I would say, of custom bikes here, maybe. I mean, Crazy Horse, good candidate.
Yeah, of course.
But they've got a similar style that we're used to seeing from them, just in terms of unexpected variety. There's some really nice stuff on this stand. And the one that's your favorite,
one of my favorites,
or at least in terms of the transformation,
for sure,
is this BMW G310.
Yeah, and I think because I like the G310, but I don't like the looks of it, it's not one I'd probably consider for myself. But to do this with it instead, we were saying this before, I think BMW probably 60s, a little 70s bit jealous of the overall
design. It's more of like 80s and has a bit of that dirt bike look. What are we looking at though, mate, in terms of making it look like that?
Well, in terms of the actual bike itself, it's pretty much as is. They didn't do an awful lot to it. I say they, it's Max Pinoni, who we know very well, obviously, as a urban rider.
Right.
Does our custom work. Well, in terms of the actual bike itself, it's pretty much as is. They didn't do an awful lot to it. I say they, it's Max Pinoni, who we know very well, obviously, because of urban rider. Who does our custom Royal Enfields and a host of other things as well. I think it was Death Machines of London is where he started with.
Oh, wow.
Right, so he has a lot of expertise and experience with it. So with this one, very, very simple mod, but in essence, you don't have to do an awful lot to, you know, a bike that's a good base, if you like, and then you just put a kit on it. It's not one you can just buy yourself, you know, off the shelf. It is made for that bike. But that's what you can do with it to make it look like
a phenomenal makeover, and also shows off some of the parts of the bike that actually look quite nice. A bit of steel trellis on the frame. That swing arm looks nice.
Yeah. Gold wheels, as we say, right?
Gold wheels.
Adding some horsepower.
Add what? 10?
Yeah, at least.
10, and it needs it, a 310. Different wheels, spoke wheels, and also a little bit of 3D printing there, I think, on those fork protectors.
Yes.
Great looking bike. And actually, I know I've said there are a few favourites today, but that's actually right up there. I can imagine that being a proper, perfect bike for the city commute.
Yeah.
Upright, tall, looking over the traffic, not too big, light on fuel, looks cool as anything.
Yeah.
Little scrambler helmet on, like a wax jacket, I'm thinking, some scrambly boots, just it's a vibe.
Total package.
Yes. Now we're over at Suzuki and some good new bikes for 2024, most of which we covered at Motorcycle Live. Specifically, actually, the GSX 8R sports bike, I think looks quite interesting. Yeah. So definitely one we'll try and review soon. But the one that caught our eye today is the V-Strom 1050 XT, is it? The off-road bias version that's over on the stand here, which has done a round-the-world trip two up. And it's a little bit battle-wearied. Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it looks okay, but yeah, it looks like it's been around the world.
Done some miles. But the thing that blew my mind about it was in the description that they've written next to the bike. It says that they got loaned it by a dealer, which, as a professional blagger in this sort of job, trying to get a bike for an hour off a dealer sometimes to shoot something, which is fine. I understand it's their bikes, up to them. Can be difficult. How the hell do you get a dealer to say, I just want to borrow that bike? You were saying they probably just said, can we have it for a couple of hours?
Yeah, right. And then just
set off.
Legged it.
Yeah. 30,000 miles later.
Yeah.
Many drops.
Once you get somewhere over Eastern Europe, there's no way they're tracking that back. It's fine.
it's
not low-jacked, is it?
They've got like a tracker on it. And they're like, wait, it's coming back.
What? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's coming back around the other side. Still really impressive. And the fact that they haven't really changed anything, they say it's pretty much stock.
Yeah.
I tried that
Testament
bike.
Testament to what that bike can do then.
I tried it last year.
Yeah.
And it's all right. It's a budget-friendly big adventure bike, but it's not as powerful or techie or perhaps as impressive performance-wise as some of the options like the GS or Tiger 12 or whatever.
Yeah.
But still, to make it around the world, in stock form, has to be some level of testament to how good it is and robust, let's say.
Yeah, and to do it, I mean, can you imagine taking the wife as
to
well
up?
Around the corner?
Well,
around, yeah.
You know what? The one thing I will say from riding it is that I found it a little bit on the tall and heavy side.
Right.
I went down a really greasy little lane that had got some mud dragged across the road by a tractor or truck. But it was getting smaller and smaller and greasier, and I had to get the bike back quite quickly. It was like a short ride and review. And I was like, I don't know why I'm going here. I'm going to have to spin it round. So I tried to turn it on this really tight lane. It was stressful. I was sweating. Like, I had all my camera stuff on my back.
Yeah.
And then just then, I think we saw the couple who did the ride.
He looked like your height,
If anything, less than my height, I'm going to say. And that's saying something.
All right. Big time, Rob. All right.
So I've got to say, shout out and proof that you can actually manage a bigger bike, even with luggage and two of them. They must have loads of luggage.
Set, right? It's the rider,
it's the
not
skills,
necessarily
baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, like, impressive feat, and I admire them for that.
Fair play.
Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed that bromantic odyssey around.
Romantic?
Bromantic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's not romantic.
I felt the same. I was worried that it wouldn't be reciprocated.
Around the London Motorcycle Show, what was your favourite pick, I'd say, on reflection now?
On reflection, it's the Langan. It has to be the Langan.
I was going to say the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easily. Just phenomenal looking, and it sounds like it's got the performance as well. Yeah, spectacular bike.
It's going to live with me a little bit, you know, rent-free up in my brain. I want to ride it. If you do get a hold of one of them, that,
give me a call.
Yeah, I'll come for that one.
I think that's one that's probably going to be occurring in your dreams for the next few weeks as you're like coasting down some beautiful road, wind in your hair. As always, we'd love to know your favorite bikes from this video down in the comments below, so do let us know. We'll be back soon with probably another news video or something like that, as well as we'll try and do some more shows. We're thinking about going to the Bike Shed, which is like our favorite custom motorcycle show. So if anyone's in favour of that, leave a comment saying aye. Anyway, many thanks for watching today, and we'll see you next time.
See you there. I'll see you there at the Bike Shed Show. That's what I meant.
Okay.
Yeah, in case that wasn't clear.
That won't be the next episode. That's not till May.
All right, well, I'll still see him there in a few months.